The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRB Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. Taking care of business and working overtime will help. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we'd like to welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Soa. Delighted to have you joining us during your drive time home. It is Tuesday. That means we are offering you the Get Back to Basics program here on Money Talk. And that means you also get to hear from my daughter, Donna Soa Allard. She's a certified financial planner professional and my partner. And on Tuesdays, she comes in and talks on topics about them. These are topics that I guess, as one person described it to me, trying to make decisions about if it deals with issues of retirement, if it deals with simple savings, if you're trying to accumulate money to buy a house, if you're a person who has gotten out of school and now you're in that first job and you're trying to figure, well, now that I got a paycheck, how do I balance the issue of that paycheck going forward? And Donna, I guess that may be the reason that probably most young people, if they give it the opportunity, even if they choose just to either do it on their own with some sort of a website or, to learn how to budget and learn how to balance their cash flow. Or maybe that's the time to actually sit down, pay a few dollars for a fee, and actually have a financial plan or financial analysis done so that they learn more about not just money, but about themselves and their money.
Yeah, I find that, families or couples will come in when they've decided that, you know what, we're combining our lives, which includes combining our financial lives. And so they'll come in and say, how do we, effectively do this together? Because people have different, money personalities and different attitudes about money, and people grow up differently, right? So the way they've been taught to handle money may be differently. So lots of times, coming in together as you're starting a life together, whether you are doing this when you're 28 or 48, is a good thing to do. What do they say? One of the leading causes of divorce is money and finance and, not communicating properly over it. So I think that if you can start off with a solid foundation that includes a solid financial foundation or management foundation, that's really, really good. The other time I see people coming in is when they feel like they're starting to really make money. You get that first job out of school and you sign up for your basic 401k there, getting your match, you get your health insurance, and then maybe it's when you get the next job or that next promotion and you say, okay, now I'm doing better than just paying my bills. I've saved some money in my savings account. How can I do better? How can I make smarter and more efficient decisions? These are, some of the first times that I very often see people coming in to get some financial advice to start doing some financial planning.
It's funny. One of my mentors in my early years of financial planning, going back decades now, he said that what he discovered through observation and from, of course, talking to others, was that a big mistake for young couples when they first get married in coming in and trying to figure out, well, okay, how are we going to handle paying bills? And they said a great many couples are, especially those who have lived on their own for a while individually.
Which nowadays is far more common than it was when you were probably having this conversation.
I mean, when I was younger, a lot of couples, would finish school or college, and then they get married coming out of college. They
get their first job. And from your parents' house to your spouse's house, basically, right?
But he said the mistake was that they may think it was about efficiency, but they would actually sit down with a ledger and look at all of the bills that they have, and then they, especially the primary large ones, the regular fixed expenses, and they would decide, okay, you pay this one, and this one, and I'll pay this one, this one, and this one. In other words, they're actually splitting up the specific bills, taking on responsibility for paying certain of them, and then once you've gotten through that list and you've covered all of the what you call fixed expenses, the ones that are constantly reoccurring, then when they look at discretion, well, basically they'd say, and for whatever if you go to lunch, if you're doing this, if you're buying clothes, you do that with what's left of your own money. He said the problem with that, as much as he could understand why some people thought it was logical, he said the problem with it was is that they didn't, the couple didn't start thinking like they were a financial unit. Mm-hmm. Like he said, I liked to use the analogy that we were each individual companies, sole proprietorships,
merging,
that are merging yeah. into one corporation. And now each of them can, based upon their productivity, can contribute to the big corporation. And then one person primarily will ultimately take on responsibility for paying the bills. Now, you can alternate that over time, or if one person simply is more comfortable doing it, go ahead. Fine. Knock yourself out. Go ahead and do it. I found, as much as I handled the financial decision-making in a business that I own as a small business owner, I didn't like paying the bills at home. And in the end, when your mother said to me, hey, if you'd really rather not do it, I don't mind doing it. I said, oh, go ahead, knock yourself out.
You know she would run a great business.
Oh, she would run a great business, you know.
If only she could get paid to run the house, she could run a great business.
What I learned very quickly was when she would come to me, she'd give me a sense of what the upcoming budget was. She would look out ahead to find when there's big ticket items coming up, say in the summer, as the summer months approached, if there were big activities that were planned. She'd let me know in advance that there was going to be a need for some additional cash coming in for this or for that or for something else.
What you just described was the fact that there one person was paying the bills, that you had really good communication about what was coming in and what was going out and what the needs were. And regardless of how you and your partner decide to set up the actual paying of bills within a house, there has to be good communication about what the inflows and outflows are so that you can make, you know, efficient decisions about that leftover money you were talking about.
Well, the other thing that it does is they said that the woman within most partnerships, within most of these households, is the one who has to know how to manage transitions better. She, you know, so the young couple, they each have a job and they each go off to work and do their thing, and then they come home and they're together at night. But they have the one household, whether it's a condominium or whether it's an actual home, a house. But then all of a sudden, she gets pregnant. And now's the possibility that she's going to be out of work for a period of time. He now moves into that role of working, being the one going off to work every day. Hopefully she has some sort of a deal at work where she's going to get paid some income while she's out on maternity leave. But ultimately she's at home, and so now she's responsible ultimately for the household, and now he's the one that's out there trying to bring in the capital and, of course, do any outside-the-house errands. When he gets the phone call, oh, stop here, stop there, pick this up.
You're so traditional.
Look, it's all very, very traditional.
You're so traditional.
Well, I don't even want to talk about your household.
I love you.
I don't even want to talk about your household as a traditionalist as these can be.
The generations below you are, you. What you described perfectly explains what your generation did. It absolutely 100% perfectly explains what your generation did. And a lot of what you just described does happen in my generation and those younger than me who are now starting to have children, but roles certainly change, division of labor certainly changes, and expectations for partners are different as well. But yeah, it's people need to be able to communicate well so that when you are going through transition, the finances don't get messed up.
Well, I'll tell you something. Maybe it deals with a cultural diversity and cultural change. But if our colleague Steve Beauvais was here, mm-hmm. and if I asked him straight out, I know exactly what he would say. If I said, what is one of the things as a husband, father, and as a professional, one of the greatest points of personal pride for you? And he would say, and this is as a personal thing, he says, I take great pride in something that is very unique seemingly nowadays. And that's the fact that, and he's trying to talk about you and I, myself mm-hmm. and him. He says the fact that we are single income households and can allow a situation where our partners can stay at home with the family, raise the kids, handle the education, and have that structural support system that was a very old line system in an environment where many households now require two incomes just to survive. He would say the great pride we should have is the fact that we support two households where our wives were able to stay at home, raise the children, and do those things that they thought were most important at that time. And it's
well, don't forget, Mom worked for a while, too.
Oh, well, I'm talking about in the years when we got kids in high school and college.
Yeah, and that is very, very difficult. It is expensive today to run a household. Expectations are very different.
Well, on tonight's program, we're going to be talking a little bit about other areas of retirement management, sources of income, things that you could do other than simply funding a 401k, 403b, or an IRA. It's about the alternative choices that some people have if they make the right choices along the way. It's all about planning. Donna Grace and I will be right back with more of the Get Back to Basics Money Talk program here on AM 790.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program, everybody. This is Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard. We're talking about the markets are always a big part of our discussions here on the show. We always start off in the first half of the show, give you a little bit of a sense of what's going on. Stocks ended sharply higher today. Donna Grace, in 2 days, we're up almost 500 points.
Yeah, we saw one down day and then two big up days, right? One previous day.
Well, if people are trying to assign, obviously, an answer for, well, why is this happening? And is this, well, yes, it's a little bit of settling down on the political issue, because if the centrist candidate in France, for example,
we're looking overseas now for political issues.
If they had done poorly, and Marine Le Pen, if she had done well in that initial, they do a screening version of the elections, and there were four primary candidates.
Oh, if they got more than 50%, they would have won, right?
Yeah, that would have been a nice thing to do, but they almost always, but as it turns out, the candidate who is the centrist in there, who actually describes himself as a protege of Margaret Thatcher from Britain's days, is the moderate of the group.
He's a moderate, and he led, right?
Yeah, he led substantially, which is a good thing, and the surveys that they have done, of course, they tried to remind us of what happened with Brexit, but the surveys they did do have placed him considerably more popular than Le Pen at this particular point in time, but we'll have to.
As long as his supporters come out and actually vote.
Yeah, they always look to the whole thing. Oh, okay, a police officer gets shot by a potential terrorist on the Champs-Élysées. You know, what does that mean? And ISIS takes credit for this. And so, I mean, obviously, Le Pen is pushing the whole, you know, populist agenda of immigration and closing that down. And she wants to build a wall around all of France, from what I understand, which would be really, really cool, I guess. And maybe she could get the same company that Trump is using for his wall. I mean, they could work out.
They could get a discount together.
They could call it the Trump Le Pen art of the deal. They could get a major wall discount. You know,
stop now.
There are rock bands that could call it another brick in the wall. bricks in the wall.
Or keep
going.
Was that the Who,
Crystal? How many bricks in that particular band that did the song?
I think that was Pink Floyd.
It was Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd,
Dad.
Absolutely.
It was
what
Pink
do you
Floyd.
Think is Pink Floyd? You know absolutely that it was Pink Floyd. Crystal's our producer today, but people don't realize that, you know, she's a rock maniac around here. She produces on everybody's shows. Even Dan York, we've actually seen that happen, and what a brave girl! She's terrific, you know. And of course, we tease her with that Crystal Blue Persuasion. We sing songs to her when we come into the place. But
you're on a roll.
On a roll. Well, anyway, the Nasdaq jumped about 0.7% and broke through that magical 6,000 number for the first time ever.
It did. And it happened early this morning.
And granted, it's sort of a certain, like I said, psychological factor, according to Cornerstone Financial.
Of course it is. It doesn't mean anything.
Managing Director Jeff Carbone, he says it took us many, many, many years to get back above 5,000, and now here we are, with seemingly overnight, above 6,000. But you've got to be very, very careful. He noted that about 40% of the index is being driven by probably five companies, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Netflix, and Alphabet. It's Google. I don't care what they say.
It's not
Alphabet. Alphabet
is
something that you're a little Gracie and those guys deal with. But Google is, and I'm sure she probably is more familiar with that anyway. If we see a downturn in the primary five or six names, he says the index could be in for it. I would imagine those five alone probably represent close to 20% of the index in terms of trading. Well, the Dow did finish up today about 232 points, closing just shy of the 21,000 level. Caterpillar and McDonald's contributed probably the most to those gains. The S&P 500 advanced 0.6%, with financials and materials rising more than 1% each to lead advancers. one, some people think that we've come to believe that Q1, the first quarter, is a little bit soft because of some reason that economists on market analysts haven't been able to pinpoint. That doesn't seem to be happening right now. Earnings thus far have been really, really good.
Some good earnings numbers.
And that's a good sign that corporate America is on a renewed path towards growth. And the thing is that, yes, we've gotten used to the idea that 50-60% of earnings when they actually report will actually meet or beat analyst estimates. But what's happened this time around is they like knocked the ball out of the park. The numbers have been quite big.
Numbers have been good, but were the expectations
as each quarter goes by, in fairness, they have
improved.
They looked at where's the bar?
Yeah, that's
how high
what
is
I'm
the
saying.
Bar? And the bar had been lowered, but it has been going up each quarter, so it's important. The President Trump, he's suggesting that, well, whatever policies that they push through in Washington, which is now instead of dealing with monetary policy, now they're talking fiscal policy, which would be tax programs, infrastructure spending, would be deregulation in a number of categories. There are some things in each of those categories which the president and his support in Congress will be able to do. But he doesn't have enough key support in key areas within Congress, especially the dealing with the
Ways and Means.
The Tea Party group, there's only 25 to 27 of them in the House, and that's a small piece of the overall numbers of people sitting there. But most Republicans in the House of Representatives are, in fact, moderates. They're not Tea Party ultra-right-wing conservatives. And that's where the problem is coming in. But that 25 or 26 is enough votes to sideline a lot of these programs, including what we saw happen with health care at the beginning of this administration.
Well, I mean, and his other big issue facing him on tax reform is the fact that I don't know how you can't talk something into being revenue neutral just because your expectation is that its result is going to generate revenue. You know, Paul Ryan and those on the Ways and Means Committee are looking for a revenue neutral, something that will pay for itself in terms of tax cuts. So if he wants cuts as big as he's asking for, he's going to have to offer up something better than it will, you know, generate more revenue.
Well, in addition to that, investors are zeroing in on issues that the president has to deal with, including the government shutdown, which in fact happens this Friday, unless the Congress can agree. If not in a long-term agreement, which we'd like to see, but instead some sort of a temporary funding resolution they may come up with.
I think something will come up.
Yeah, I heard a couple of the congressmen today saying that they're expecting there may be some sort of a deal in the works that will actually keep the government open through the end of September, which is enough time for them to perhaps push through a couple of other issues that they're focusing on. In the meantime, earnings, tax reform, these are the big stories in the market. For 2 months now, we were in a consolidation phase, sort of, and now we have the NASDAQ up at all-time highs, so it'll be interesting to see if this continues. We saw foreign markets, international markets, and European markets based upon the promise of a favorable outcome in 2 weeks in the final election in France, that, you know, a government coming into place that would not be inclined to want to leave the Eurozone, do their own version of Brexit, or, you know, get out of NATO and all the things that Marine Le Pen, who is the ultra-right-wing candidate, has been talking about. You know, there seems to be more support for the centrist candidate, which is more of a moderate position, which a lot of governments around the world would like to see a much more moderate position during times where the populist approach to things has sort of been driven by some level of outrage and momentum that they have in those categories, especially following the U.S. elections and the Brexit vote last year. Listen, folks, we're going to take a quick break here on the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to AM 790. Here in studio with me is my daughter, Donna Sowa Ellard, and this is the Get Back to Basics program. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about alternative ways of funding, hopefully a financially independent retirement. We shall return, so please stick around.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
welcome you back to the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. I'm here with Donna Sowa-Allard and myself, Don Sowa. And we are certified financial planner professionals, for those of you who are new to the show. On Tuesdays, we get together and talk about some very basic ideas related, especially related to financial planning. Not the earliest goals that we have in financial planning, but what is obviously, by most standards, the largest and sometimes most difficult goal is an efficient, financially independent retirement.
You know, it's not the earliest attained goal by any means. However, it is one of the ones that you need to start thinking about as early as pretty much anything else.
Well, Donna, you do a lot of financial planning for younger couples starting out in their lives, but the ones that have maybe just bought a home, maybe they're starting to raise a family, in helping them to understand the idea of, number one, identifying these key goals in financial planning during a lifetime, but also prioritizing them. If they don't prioritize them correctly, they may have the inability to fund the largest ultimate goal that they will have, and that can be a huge problem.
You know, it comes down to making intentional, smart decisions about money early on so that you put yourself in a good position moving forward. The sooner you start saving for something, the less money you have to save over time because of the value of time and compound interest, right? If you start saving money earlier, then you start earning on your earnings even earlier. That's compound interest. So the sooner you start, the better off you are. So that's why I always tell people, even if they feel like they have nothing to spare in their budget, I say, when you get your job, find out what your company matches and try to just put in the amount to get that match. Because once you do it, you've already made a 100% return on your money. Don't leave that money on the table. So if you need to put in 4% in order to get 3% from your company, do it. Find a way and just do it.
Yeah, it's funny. I did have a gentleman come up to me in public, and he recognized me, and he says, well, doing the show, he said, well, what do you do? You know, I know you talk about these wonderful plans out there, the 401ks and all these other things. What do you do if you don't have a 401k plan? And I said, well, remember, a 401k is a company-sponsored companies, it's not an IRA, because IRA stands for individual retirement account, and that's a company-sponsored retirement savings plan. But you can establish an individual retirement account if you have earned income. And the only limitations will be is if you're under 50, $5,500 is the amount you could put away. But if you and your spouse are working, you could put in $11,000. Or if you as an individual, say you're a one-income family, but you're earning enough money to qualify, then you could set up a spousal IRA and put in, again, more than the $5,500 that you limit.
We get this question a lot, and people say, well, what if I want to save more than that? And I say, well, you can save money not in an IRA. Once you max out your retirement contributions in the individual plan, then look to a traditional brokerage account. You can invest money.
Donna, how many clients do you have that will have a retirement, either if they're still working, maybe a 401k or a 403b type of company-sponsored plan, and then when they do retire, so there's one IRA in the husband's name and an IRA in the partner's name, and a joint account possibly in between the two. And the joint account is a viable, and how delightful is it for you in terms of real planning for income when you see a sizable joint account or individual account?
And in this joint or individual account, think of it as it functions similarly to the way a savings account does in that it's after-tax dollars that you put in. And just like your savings in the bank have interest and you pay, you pay taxes on that interest, well, in your individual account, you pay taxes on your earnings. You pay capital gains taxes or ordinary income on dividends. So it's sort of like a souped-up savings account that allows you to take on some risk, which allows you to have better returns.
Well, it's a very fancy savings account that has no income limitations. You can put it
away. No limitations.
As much as you can put away. You can take money out when you need to. You can put money in when you'd like to. But one plan you might actually have that you can engage in some tax strategies in terms of the way you take money out.
The way you take money out, because like I said, you're going to be paying capital gains as opposed to ordinary income on most of the earnings in there. And the important thing about it is the flexibility of it. You can own anything in it. You can buy and sell whenever you want to, as long as you're aware of the tax ramifications, and it adds less to your tax return than distributions from an IRA. So it really provides you with a high level of flexibility.
Well, which is cool, because a gentleman the other day was saying, well, you know, I'd like to take $30,000 to buy a car.
And don't want to take that out of your IRA and a lump sum.
And he had an IRA and he had an individual account. I said, well, I says, you certainly the most expensive car you'll buy is the one coming out of the IRA because that's going to be added to your. I mean, he's over 59 and a half, so there's no penalty, but the whole $30,000 will be added to his tax return as ordinary income.
Yeah.
Yet with the individual account, as he said, you could go in if he had some capital losses embedded with some of the holdings in there, which will happen from time to time. You could coordinate selling assets at a loss with selling assets at a gain, and you wash the tax liability. That's the cheap money.
Yeah, and my favorite tool to use if you qualify based on income limits to do it is a Roth IRA. So if you, as a married couple filing jointly, if you make under $193,000, then you're eligible to have Roth IRAs. They have the same contribution limits as traditional IRAs, but it's after-tax money that goes in and comes out tax-free if you're over 59 and a half. You're also able to take out the basis or your contributions if you're under 59 and a half. So it's super flexible and gives you the benefit of not paying taxes on any earnings. So this has the biggest benefit if you start contributing to it early on.
If you have surplus income while you are growing as a professional, growing as a family, but you don't happen to have a company-sponsored plan, there are lots of choices, lots of places where you can put that money, places that some of which are tax-favored, some of which are not, but ultimately, in the end, there's lots
of... You have options.
There's options where you can get better than the 1% or less that you can get in the bank. There's lots of different choices you'll have. Your financial advisor, whoever you're working with, should explain to you not only what the choices are, what the limitations as well as the opportunities are, but also explain the risks to you so there's no mistakes.
Remember that there is risk that you're taking on with any investment, but these can be great tools if you're looking for something for long-term savings.
Now, Donna, for a great many people, we're finding nowadays that the largest personal and financial asset that they may own may in fact be their IRA rollovers or their 401ks. We see a lot of plans that are really quite sizable. And if you have a husband and wife working together, both of them, when they roll over their 401k or 403b plans, the personal IRA rollovers they have can be substantial and used to produce income. Yet in the old days, and I say that, when I was younger, in my old days.
You're talking about the generation before you,
It was very, very rare that a person would have specific retirement assets that would, like a savings plan, or the early days of IRAs, which were limited how much you could put away. Those accounts could be important, but they were very seldom as valuable in true value as the underlying equity inside your house.
Yeah.
The person's house was their biggest asset for many people.
And there are a lot of Americans who have not been saving significantly for retirement, and so for them too, their largest asset is the equity in their home.
Now, this is a reason why I still to this day do, as part of general planning early on, say, as you get within that 10 and 15 year time frame of actual your planned retirement, one of the issues that you should be doing, in addition to saving as much money in intelligent places, saving as much as you reasonably can, taking an appropriate level of risk based upon your time frame and your needs, I said, and pay off your big and expensive debts. Now, that means get rid of all the damn credit cards. Let's face it.
We want to get rid of those as quickly as we can.
Those are stupid. When you're looking at stupid money, 9, 10, 15%, 17% we've seen on some people who had no idea they were paying that much in the APR.
You'd be paying even more right now. There are some credit cards that I think even in the super low interest rate environment, you could be paying as much as 24% on them.
And if you didn't read the fine print on the statement you got, you'll say, how's that possible? When I did this, I did the rollover. It was like 2 and change. I said, all you need to do be is 1 or 2 days late on it, and then automatically it switches over to whatever they call the penalty rate.
I have a client who had a significant amount of credit card debt, but was brilliant, and I mean she's fantastic. She's on top of it at doing the balance transfer. So she pays like a 3% transfer fee and gets 0% for like 18 months, and then when that's up,
goes to
another one. So over the course of 3 years,
it's like a job.
Well, she has to keep meticulous, track of it. But over the course of 3 years, she and her husband were able to pay off a significant amount of debt. It was like over $30,000 at 0%. Well, technically at 3%, I guess, because you pay the transfer fee, but at a 0% interest rate for that time. So if you're good at keeping track of that, that could be a great tool. However, if you don't realize that your grace period's over and now the regular APR kicks in, then you could suddenly be going from 0% up to 18, 24, 23%. So you have to be very, very careful if you are taking advantage of a 0% intro rate. When does that period end? When does that period end? And when and how much are you going to be paying? Because that really changes the situation.
Well, as I mentioned, as part of this, granted, I like the idea of having large amounts of money put away in investment plans and savings vehicles, savings plans if you can. Certainly take advantage, like you had mentioned, of whatever offer your company, if they have one, especially if they have a matching provision. Please put away as much money as you can to at least get the full match, because as far as I'm concerned, that's part of your pay.
They're expecting. When they budgeted for you, they expected that they were going to have to pay that match for you, so you should be taking advantage of it.
But that said, once you've gone through all of that, if in fact you've been disciplined about your home, keeping it in good shape, very important. The value of the house has an awful lot to do with condition. Doing the things you need to do, having it properly insured at the proper level and properly maintained, the value of that home will grow. And I do feel, even though there's arguments on the other side of this, and I understand that, I do feel that one good planning feature that would be nice to have would be to get to your normal retirement age and also find that you've paid down completely the outstanding mortgage on the house.
I understand why in this very low interest rate environment there's an argument to keep the mortgage into retirement, but I 100% agree with you that if you can get that paid off, in most situations, that's the right thing to do.
And there's a reason for doing that other than just the psychology of owning your own house. And some people will say it's as simple as that. I just want to know that every day when I pull up to the driveway, that place, this physical property belongs to me. And I understand that, and it's a big deal. My father-in-law used to say the same thing. He says, you know, owning your own home. He says that's the part of the American dream, and he was part of that generation that really bought into the idea of what the American dream is.
Well, part of that also means that when you get to retirement, the amount of money you need on a monthly basis is significantly lower because you don't have that housing cost of either rent or mortgage hanging over
so
you.
So that was the first argument. Get rid of the pay off the mortgage, because if you look back at your budget, for a great many, not everybody, but for a great many people, the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, the PITA, that's the largest bill you pay.
Well, you still got the taxes and insurance, but if you get that monkey off your back of principal and interest, you really own an asset. And it brings down your monthly costs.
Well, about halfway through my career, the financial services industry came up with a new financial product that was based upon a change in regulation. The Home Equity Conversion Mortgage, HECM, under HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, is an FHA. It's called I'm sure you've heard about it, a reverse mortgage program, and that enables you to withdraw some of the equity of your home. The HECM is a safe plan that can give older Americans greater financial security, and many seniors use it to supplement other sources of income like Social Security, it's there to help meet unexpected medical expenses, make home improvements, and a great many other things.
It creates a source of income where you would not have had one otherwise.
So here you are, another asset that you've spent a lifetime creating, and it's a money machine that a lot of people were not fully aware of how to use it and how to use it most efficiently. When we come back from this break, we're going to explain to you some of the details, the good, the bad, and the ugly of reverse mortgages. I'm Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard. This is the Get Back to Basics Money Talk program, and we will be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
We welcome you back, folks, to the Money Talk program with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. Look, we're talking about reverse mortgages over the next few minutes, and obviously don't have enough time to go into every single detail that you can have, but if you are interested in more information about the reverse mortgage, you can call the National Council on Aging. Their number is 800-510-0301. That's 800-510-0301. It is pretty smart to learn to know about reverse mortgages if you own a home, because it's that opportunity for you to use that home as efficiently as you possibly can. Donna, real quickly, what basic definition of what is a reverse mortgage?
A reverse mortgage is a mortgage that allows you to convert part of the equity in your home into either a stream of cash flow or just a source of income for you. So there are many different ways to do it. I know that you can do it through a line of credit, or it can be like a lump sum that goes into your checking account. But the bottom line is that you're turning equity that you have in your home into a usable asset to help you pay for expenses. And you don't have to pay it back while you're living there, which is another really important part of it.
Yeah. They have... It is
interesting. You have to be 62. I mean, I'm sorry. I didn't know how much you wanted me to go into.
Well, yeah.
That,
I mean, that's obviously the person who's qualified for it is going to be 62 years of age and older. You have to actually have a reasonable amount of equity in your house.
Yeah. There has to be enough equity in
there.
If
you have a $500,000 house and you've got a $400,000 loan on there,
that's not going to work.
No,
this is designed for people who have either paid off their entire mortgage or most of their mortgage, because when they do it, the mortgage balance has to be paid off in the process. It has to be part of the reverse mortgage. So once that bit is paid off, there has to be enough equity left for you to make it worth it.
Yeah. And the thing that makes it interesting is that when you bought the home and you borrowed money from the bank so that you could make that major, I mean, obviously it usually covers the largest part of the cost, the part that you didn't have cash to put down on it. So basically, I mean, how many times have you heard that phrase, I own my home with the bank? Yeah, because they now have they have a proprietary interest. They have an ownership interest in the bank. Your obligation now is to pay based upon the contract you have, which is affected by the time frame you use, whether it's 15 years or 30 years or whatever. And the interest rate that applies, and that's part of your initial contract. And so they calculate what the monthly payment will be. And that monthly payment will be principal payments and interest. And it's all broken out in the contract. In the very beginning, the amount you're paying is going to be different. And the amount that goes into reducing your principal will change over time. But, you know, as with all things, the reverse mortgage is a little bit different. You go in. You sit down. They audit the value of the house.
You do an appraisal,
a regular appraisal, and they'll go in and they'll say, okay, let's say for sake of discussion, they're going to give you a certain percentage, and this will depend on your age, by the way, a certain amount of the money that they're willing to loan you. And the older you are, interestingly enough, the larger the percentage they will usually allow you,
because they know they're going to get their money back sooner.
Yeah, because remember, the bank is the one thing I complained about when I was first introduced to reverse mortgages was the high cost. In other words,
and they used to be much more expensive than they are now.
Were before.
There's a lot more regulation now.
Yeah, it's more regulation of it now, and the government has created a much more fair product under the FHA-type program. But the issue would be to say, if you say you had a house that was worth $400,000 and you own it outright, they're going to go in and say, all right, let's say if you're 63 years old, we're going to give you... will allow you to take $200,000 or 50% of the value of that house out in the form of a reverse mortgage. Now, there are three different ways that you could take the money out, right?
So you can do a line of credit, a cash out, or an annuity.
Well, you could
payment.
Take a lump sum.
Yeah. That's the cash
take
out.
The whole
That's
thing,
what I meant.
Yeah. You could take a monthly payment, like an annuity type payment over time. Or you could do what I've found, the people I know that have used the reverse mortgage very happily and efficiently were the ones that established a line of credit. And so it was like an account that actually continued to bear, it was an interest-bearing account, continued to actually grow a little bit, but you had the ability to go and draw money out of it, almost like a checkbook type thing. And your obligation, much like a homeowner's normal line of credit, you had the ability to create the debt yourself by saying, okay, I'll take $1,000 out now. Now, this would be best suited for the person who doesn't really need income from the reverse mortgage to simply supplement their monthly income to pay bills.
Maybe they need it for a repair or for
something
else.
Yeah, big ticket item coming. coming up, something they know is coming up.
Something out of the ordinary.
And by the way, there are some origination fees and things of that type, but they're not being charged specifically for having the reverse mortgage. The bill is applied as you create the loan.
The important thing to remember is if you are going to use this to help either supplement income or cover costs in retirement, again, you have to be over 62 in order to utilize this. The amount you take out is going to be based on the age of the younger borrower. So if you're a couple, it's going to be based on the younger of the two of you. And one of you has to remain living in the house. That's an important part of it. And you have to maintain the property because, remember, you don't have to pay this back while you're alive. But when the two of you either sell the house or pass away and then the house is sold, the bank has to get paid back
first.
They're
the primary creditor.
They have to get paid back first. They're taking on risk, which is part of why they used to be, you know, so expensive and still are more expensive than a traditional mortgage, right?
The beauty of it is that as you take out this loan, you don't have to pay out a monthly check to anybody. The bank will eventually get their money, again, when the house is either sold or when you pass away and it's cleared as part of your estate, they become a principal creditor on the estate. And they may have to wait a while for that, or they know that.
People are very concerned about leaving something to their kids. And I know that, a generation ago, the idea was that I'm going to leave the kids the house. I'm going to create an estate, and this is what I'm passing on to my children. But as we continue to live longer, and we'll only continue to live longer because of advances in medicine and technology, people are going to be looking for additional sources of income. And so if you've undersaved, or if you just happen to, have life events that have you run through your retirement savings, you may need to turn to a source like a reverse mortgage to help supplement your income. And you shouldn't feel ashamed about it, because guess what? You don't owe your kids anything at this point. I would much rather see my parents live a happy and comfortable retirement in their home as long as they can, as opposed to worrying about passing something on to me or my siblings. I don't know if they feel the same, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, so. And you're right. A lot of families did feel that this was the legacy that they're leaving behind. But I've always suggested to them, I said, you know something? You may live a long time, and while you are here, I promise you, one of the greatest gifts you can give them is to never be a financial burden on your children.
Right. So
they got burdens of their own.
People need to remove the level of shame that used to accompany this, I think, and
folks,
use it as a tool.
Once again, if you want more information about reverse mortgages, feel free to call the National Council on Aging. It's 800-510-0301. That's 800-510-0301. They're great. They will answer any question you have, whether you qualify and I use the term good, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Hey, folks, this has been the Money Talk program with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning in. And by the way, tune in tomorrow. Steve Bove will be here at 5 o'clock for more Money Talk. In the meantime, have a good evening.